I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning individuals in Uganda have plenty of reason to live in fear and in the shadows. Homophobia is widespread in the country and the African continent as a whole. We invited Tim McCarthy back to discuss his ongoing projects to advance LGBTQ rights in Uganda. It's good to see you again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mindy.
Also with us is Ugandan field reporter for the project, Daus Kirisa, who's visiting us in studio. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Mindy.
And Tim, your project is titled Voices Combating Homophobia in Uganda. So remind us the details of the project.
Essentially, Westerners have gone to Uganda and really taught them how to practice homophobia in a really drastic manner. There was originally a Kill the Gays bill, which turned into a Jail Them for Life law. The project that I'm working with Daus and Pepe Julian Onzima, who hopefully we'll get a clip from him as well later on, is basically to begin this conversation from the standpoint of a Ugandan to another Ugandan. Lots of Westerners go to Uganda and take the story back to us, but no one really develops the technology or the storytelling and the ability of one Ugandan to talk to another. That's the essence of the project, and frankly, that's what Daus is. Daus has been the man to do that.
All right. Before we talk to Daus, we're going to hear a clip. Tell us about this clip that we're about to hear.
Everybody in the world knows how the world sees them. Everybody's told every day how they get seen by the world. But not very often do we get to tell the world how we want them to see us. See Me As is the name of the film.
I believe I was brought into this world to serve others. In short, I'd say I'm a giver. And it will depend from knowledge, whether it's simply the knowledge bit or volunteering to do something or indulging in a community event or act or simply being employed. I'm more of a giver.
So, Daus, the Human Rights Campaign invited you to D.C. for their global summit. Congratulations, first of all, on
that.
Thank you. What kinds of information about your grassroots work did they share with the others at the summit?
Thank you, Mindy. I shared a lot of stuff, knowledge at the Human Rights Campaign Global Summit that took place in Washington for 1 week. And I was so privileged to be invited for that event because it was my first time to be, you know, in D.C. and also in the States. Mm. I shared, you know, how we do work involving, you know, activism, you know, doing all this video work, how I go in the field, how I edit the videos, and so many things, and how the situation he is in Uganda as a country. I shared quite a number of things, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, you've been working closely with, as Tim mentioned, Pepe. Tell us a little bit about Pepe and his work.
Pepe is actually Pepe is the boss. Is a he is together with him they initiated this project, and I work close with him because he's also the programs director of Sexual Minorities Uganda, which is an umbrella organization for all LGBT organizations in the country. That's Uganda, and working with Pepe, it's a great feeling to work with such a renowned trans activist, mm-hmm. trans man, and he gives me courage, you know, in so many things.
Yeah.
Just like Tim.
Yeah. So Tim, tell us a little more about Pepe.
Wow. Okay. Pepe is a trans man, as Daus has said. He grew up in Arua, which is in the northern part of Uganda, up on the Sudanese and the Congolese borders. And I had the privilege of going back there with him, and what a visit that was. It was the first time that he had gone back after he had his breasts removed, and he got to meet his family and actually a sister who had come, he had never met before. She had just come back from the Congo after being there for about 40 years. So personally, you know, what can I say as an American and from the privileged point of view that I come from, but to be able to witness something as transformative and as courageous as that? Because honestly, it is incredibly courageous, and Daus is really not giving himself enough credit here yet, because the thing that I witnessed in D.C. was another extension of that same kind of courage. We all wonder what it's like to live in Uganda being gay, but can I even ask what it would be like for a gay Ugandan to come to the United States and to see what's here? It takes a great deal of courage to do that. So, you know, when I watched all the activists, including Dowse at that global summit, I was impressed. I was really impressed because essentially that's my purpose in being here. It sounds like I'm trying to do something for them, but I'm really not. I'm trying to do something for myself, and surrounding myself with people like this makes me a better person. Mm.
Dowse, how do you identify people to give cameras to, and did you give them advice or direction on what kinds of stories to collect?
Yeah, I do. I actually did, and I gave them some of these tips on how to gather stories, if you were to collect an interview, to get an interview from someone, what are some of the necessary steps you follow. And how do you conduct an interview with them? How do you, talk to people? Because you need to get all these emotions. You need to be, put yourself in their shoes. You know, listen to their stories. Be careful. You know, and there are quite a number of things that you listen to, and then you're like, yeah, I think you share also. You know, for example, if I'm having you mainly as my, you know, as the person I'm collecting a story from, I would, you know, you tell me something touching, I also share something with you. And then, you know, the story can, you know, move and flow so well. Mm. Yeah.
Did you try to include voices from both urban and rural areas? And was that a challenge to do that?
I included it. Yes, I did include it. And it's a bit challenging because in the urban areas, it can be, you know, people are a bit, you know, modernized. They understand a bit. But when you go to the rural areas, it's very hard. People are so, you know, cultural, so religious, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, culture comes in when it comes to the rural areas. It's so tough. So it's not easy. You just have to be very careful when you do the story or when you're doing an interview.
Yeah, we're saying very careful a lot. And it made headlines worldwide in February of 2014. And Tim, you mentioned just when the Ugandan president signed into law a ban on homosexual acts. Not only did it become legal to jail homosexuals, citizens were compelled to report those suspected of being homosexuals to the police. The law was later annulled, but there is still a lot of stigma and fear surrounding homosexuality in Uganda. So what kinds of discussions did you have with people about their safety as you had them interview people with the project? And did people express apprehension or concern?
Well, the kind of safety, you know, I always say to myself or to other people, I tell them that safety, security starts with you. If you're living in an area where you think you are unsafe and what you need to do is, you know, to look for, you know, emergency relocation, get away from that place. If the police is looking for you, you know, let the lawyers know, because we have lawyers who actually are good at you know, handling cases of LGBT Ugandans. And some of those, you know, safety measures I give to these people, you know, my own people, as including myself, because I'm also into the LGBT category.
Mindy, let me interrupt for just a second here. So the project made a decision a long time ago that two things are true. Yes, people are in danger, but they're even more in danger if they don't communicate. So how do we break the danger cycle except to start having them communicate? So we chose to allow people to have a blurred picture so that their face is not there and their real names are not used, and even we guise their voice. Even while we do that, of course, we protect them, but we encourage them and we instill in them a sense of courage, because it takes a great deal. As Dow says, we've been to the way outside of Kampala, okay? And it's very dangerous and very unusual for these people to have this thing occur. So for them, it's a huge act of courage. And again, to witness that is quite something. The other side of the coin is that, you know, I'd like to Dowse to talk about what it feels like for him as an LGBTI Ugandan to give that opportunity to another one to talk, and how they express to him their gratitude for what he does.
Well, to me, it feels so touching sometimes, but then at times it's quite interesting, you know, sharing hope, you know, with a person speaking the same language, you know, same dialect, and then, you know, sharing all the experience. I feel so good, you know, speaking to my fellow, you know, LGBT Ugandans, you know, sharing all these stories and then all the hope, and then it makes me happy.
You're not alone.
Yes, and I know I know the situation is very hard in Uganda, but still, when you share, you know, with your when I share with my fellow Ugandan, you know, stories, I feel at home.
We're talking with Tim McCarthy and Deuce Karisa about their video project, Voices Combating Homophobia in Uganda. More after a break. You're listening to The Point. With us in studio is Tim McCarthy and Deuce Karisa, who are discussing their video project, Voices Combating Homophobia in Uganda. Pepe himself experienced arrest and brutality because of his sexual orientation. So tell us what happened, either one of you. Tell us what happened to Pepe.
Yes, actually that was a very sad day that it makes me, you know, so emotional every time I remember about that very day.
Douse was there.
I was there, actually. That was a day that we had Pride Uganda. We normally have this entire week of events, and that was a Friday that we had this beauty pageant, which is for Mr. and Miss Gay. We are in the middle of the event, very interesting, you know, girls, you know, dressed up so nicely, and the boys as well. And all of a sudden, police comes in and then invaded the whole event. And we are so many, many LGBTI people in this big room gathered. So police came in and they started, you know, arresting people, started beating them. They told us to kneel down. People's hair were, you know, was you know, removed, you know. So many people are so traumatized. Actually, we're traumatized. And we had one other person who was actually, he jumped from the last floor to the ground. He broke his spine. He broke his spine. So that day, Pepe went outside to, you know, to calm all these policemen, to tell them that this is a lawful event. It has been you know, allowed by the police. So the police couldn't hear anything. They could not listen to him. Instead, they arrested him with several other activists. And when Pepe himself, when he was taken to the police station, he was beaten. He was tortured by the inmates that he met in the jail. So Pepe was so traumatized. Pepe was so affected to the extent that he lost he cannot hear.
In one of his ears.
Yes, he can't hear.
And Pepe spoke publicly about the experience, and you filmed his talk. In the film, you can see how upsetting it is for him to recount the ordeal, and we have a clip from the end of that speech. Let's take a listen.
I want to also say that whatever we experienced, whoever subjected us to whatever they subjected us to, today we are seated here because we want them to be brought to book. And also we are seated here because we do not want the public to believe the lies that have been told by the police, that no one was hurt, by the Minister of Ethics and Integrity, that no one was hurt. Those are lies, because I've already told you, as I sit here, I cannot hear in my left ear. It also speaks about the sitting arrangement. The young man who fell, who jumped because of fear, is still in critical condition with his back. But also the amazing thing is that his mother is by his side. I want to tell that story because people like the police, people like Father Lokodo, want this Ugandan community to believe that our parents do not stand by us, that we are filth, that we are criminals, and so on. But it's powerful to see that even when the mother knows what exactly happened, the man is there by his side. And I think for me that's the part of the story that must also be told. That as much as, you know, government officials with their powerful positions and voices want us to be abandoned and thrown away, that we're part of this community, we're part of Uganda, and that however much the country wants to live, you know, burying its head in the sand that we're not here, we are here. And even if we are jailed unlawfully, we'll come back and still continue to have a voice and a face and put a face to it. I am personally traumatized, but I'm not going to let them win. They won't win because I'm Ugandan and I deserve basic rights as any other Ugandan. Thank you.
Pepe talks about propaganda from the government and police. Since you first started the project, are you finding people are becoming more comfortable contradicting the government and police when they spread misinformation or lies about the LGBT community?
Yes, yes, we do find, I do find myself, to my experience, so many people are still spreading all the propaganda, you know, and they are, you know, trying to, you know, because the project is all about video. And people who are so homophobic, who are against LGBTI rights in Uganda, think we are promoting homosexuality in Uganda, which is against the law. You understand that?
Right.
Yes. So people are still fighting. And like previous, we had a name, which was Voices Abasias. And Abasias, it's a word which means queer. In Uganda, it would be so rude to call someone Omsiazi or Abasiazi. It would be so rude. That would be like an insult. So we had that, and then eventually we had to change the name because everyone, like, you could say, oh, Voices of Abasiazi. It would be like, oh? Mm. So you are here to promote homosexuality. That's what they would think. Mm. And it's the police is so, the police is two-sided. You know, it's so they are so corrupt. They will come, they will need money. You give them money so that they can give you protection. And they, at the end of it, they will tell you that orders from the above. We cannot protect you. They have eaten your money. Mm. For example, you know, if we call them at events so that they can give us security. And this is what happens. People are still... And they are very, very, very homophobic, and they are fighting us. Mm. And this affects my work.
Yeah. So how are statements like Pepe's received by the larger community? You know, because he's clearly saying we have the rights of everybody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pepe's statement, actually, when he made that statement, it went straight to the Minister of Ethics and Integrity. That's Father Lukodo he was talking about. He has been so hard on LGBTI people. On that very day, he actually promised, he even called a mob. He promised to gather a mob of hooligans to come and beat us all or kill us. Mm.
If they had pride.
If we had pride, if we continue to have pride. Because that event... on that event that they invaded us, on the next day we are supposed to have a pride march, parade. So the minister threatened to gather a mob so that they can come and kill us all. And it's very sad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so sad and very threatening.
Yeah. If I can just make a comment about the night that we're talking about here that Pepe was arrested. First of all, Douse was there behind the video camera, and he says the police came in. But if I'll take a moment to describe what that really means. They came in with M16s. These were not just police officers in pretty blue uniforms with little handguns. No. These guys were dressed in military fatigues and M16s, all provided by our U.S. government. This event was taking place on the sixth floor of a building. The police had surrounded the entire building, blocked off every single entrance, and then they went up by the tens. These were not one or two cops. They were by the tens. And they went around and ripped off the hair weaves and wigs of some of the people participating in this event. And if you are a young Ugandan, a young teenager, early 20s, and you're witnessing this, you are terrified.
Absolutely.
There's, oh my goodness, don't forget, this is where the Rwandan genocide, they just celebrated the 20th anniversary where a million people were hatcheted to death, okay? This is the next country over. This is the place where Idi Amin was. So the danger in which they are in is so much greater. And for them to take the courage to do this is really outstanding. The other thing is, and this goes back to the safety thing, oddly enough, Pepe participating in that press conference was a safety valve. It really did give him some safety measure because immediately the larger world, and yes, it's of course important to understand how the civil society within Uganda is perceiving it, but in all sincerity, the only pressure, the only real way out is by having the international community pressure the Ugandan government. That's how Pepe got out the first place, because we made sure the embassies, the U.S. and the British and the Norwegian embassies, knew right away. The problem with Uganda in some respects, and Dallas has certainly hinted at this, is that it's had a dictator for 30 years. And we all know civil society is the only thing that can really protect a person, and that the growth of that and the production of that and the generation of the civil society is what's up. So Pepe participating in those press conferences helps him because he's defended by Hiroff and what's the other one? Oh, goodness, I'm blanking out now on the other one. Uganda 4. I'm so sorry. I'll think of the other set of lawyers. But
Chapter 4.
Chapter 4, thank you. Oh, my goodness, forgive me. But there is, you know, regardless of what it might look like, is when LGBTI people are fighting for their rights, in honesty, what they're fighting for is human rights. And that affects everyone. Because, actually, I'll ask Dows to talk about Stella for a minute. Talk about Stella Nayez for a minute.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know Stella, right?
I don't know Stella.
No, she doesn't.
She's actually she's a mother, a feminist, and also a queer woman who has been so supportive to the LGBT community. And she was arrested. She was arrested by the government after
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks back. She has been, even yesterday, she appeared in court, and then she was denied bail. Stella Nyanzi, she has been so supportive to us. How? She has been attending Pride events. She has been, you know, criticizing, you know, government as to why it harasses LGBTI persons. She has been there to speak for us on so many issues, health, you know, and recently when she came up with criticizing the government as to why it's not providing sanitary pads to the girl child, so she went on her Facebook page, and then she, you know, had to write all these, you know, through, and she called Museveni, the president, a pair of buttocks. So the president is actually pressed charges against her that she is calling the president, who is a high-profile person in the country, a pair of buttocks. So it's very, you know, complicated story because the issue is still in court, and then she still continues to appear in court.
In a nutshell, Stella is or was a university professor at the top university in Uganda, Makerere University. She lost that job because the government doesn't like what she does. And the president's wife is the minister of education, okay? And young girls in Uganda cannot go to school because they have menstruation and then no one provides them any sanitary pads. So what Stella did was put out a campaign asking for people to give them money to buy these pads for these young girls so that they could go to school. And of course, that social media campaign really garnered a lot of attention. And of course, they tried to shut her down in every way, and the only way they could find it is because she publicly called the president a pair of buttocks. Literally, those were the words. And it is more than idiotic, you know? I mean, seriously. So if you can just perceive of that, and that is not even queer, right? That's mm-hmm. just little girls needing to go to school, and you're the president's wife, and that's your job to get kids to school, and you won't. And yet they spend so much money on bullets, you know, things like that. So mm-hmm.
let's have another clip from the movie. This is a Ugandan pastor.
The Uganda I want to see is a Uganda which does not discriminate on issues of sexuality, because whether they want it or not, they will kill me today, but tomorrow another LGBTI person will be born. So let's accept that as humans, as Ugandans, we have no authority to stop this. But let's just be friendly to them and, you know, accept that these are among us and they are our own children.
Who is that talking?
That's a pastor. Mm-hmm. He's from rural Uganda. That's where he's based. He has an organization mm-hmm. helping LGBTI people and sex workers mm-hmm. in the community.
Tim, when we had you last on, the political and social climate in Uganda was anti-gay to the extent that the LGBTQ were fearful of their safety and ostracized from families and society. And we're talking, it still sounds like it's pretty much that way. So has there been any changes in all in the culture toward the LGBT community since the last time we talked about this?
Wow.
It's been a while.
Yeah, what a question. Okay, so yes and no, as Dos and I like to tell each other these days, that's a complicated thing. So the first of all, the law that was passed and celebrated on national television was invalidated by their constitutional court. It didn't reach a quorum. So that just means now they're trying to bring the law back up, okay? And in this time, putting the death penalty back into it. So there's been no lessening of the vehemence whatsoever. In some respects, as Dowse has described, this past summer, they actually heightened their interaction because they really never bothered these pride events before, but clearly they are now. So I think that it is escalating in terms of the government response. But can I also say, though, that I think it's escalating from within the community itself, that they're not going to stand up for this anymore. Because this Stella, you know, in some respects, AIDS was the thing that really drew our community together in this country and really fought for rights. Well, in some case, in some strange way, that's what's happening with Stella right now, and just getting sanitary pads for young girls. That's what's drawing everyone's attention and making everyone see how idiotic it is. You can't even call the president a pair of buttocks without going to jail, and the reason you did so is because he's not helping little children go to school. Along with that picture.
We're talking with Tim McCarthy and Deuce Carissa about their video project, Voices Combating Homophobia in Uganda. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. With us in studio is Tim McCarthy and Deuce Carissa. We are discussing their video project, Voices Combating Homophobia in Uganda. All right, we have another clip. In this one, we hear why having straight allies is so important to LGBTQ rights.
With LGBT work in Uganda, allies are very important because they give you that cover. Because you need that cover, definitely. Because activism is very dangerous in Uganda. So I think the allies we have created give us that cover that you might not feel it, but there's that kind of protection you have around you, that you're always around people who everyone knows are not LGBT, but are working with you or are respecting you or are defending you. And so it gives you so much protection, because if you decide to go into this world, I won't call it a world, but into this, this movement, say it is us against them. I mean, if everyone knows LGBT are a minority, they will crush you. So you can't do an us against them. You need to bring them closer and let them start understanding you slowly but surely. So for me, I think allies are very important.
Right, so as we mentioned, under Uganda's 2014 anti-homosexuality law, which we mentioned was later annulled, there were penalties for non-governmental organizations and media that support homosexuals. So are we seeing straight people becoming more comfortable or at least less fearful to work with members of the LGBTQ community?
The straight allies, they're less, you know, I don't know how to phrase it, but the street community is not, they actually fear working with LGBTI communities.
Do they fear what's going to happen to them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they think if they associate with LGBTI people, they are going to call them homosexuals as well. Mm-hmm. They're going to be abandoned by their families as well, you know. And then they also think they're going to be arrested. When the law, when the bill was passed into a law in 2014, that's way back in February, some of the allies we had, a few allies we had, they had to back up, like to back off, sorry. Mm-hmm. They had to back off. They had to leave us, thinking that they are going to be arrested. We had organizations in civil society organizations who are for women rights and then children rights. But then when the law was passed, they all had to run away.
And this is an important community. The straight community is an important community that can really help, right? I mean, you need them.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Yeah.
Because they say two heads are better than one. Right. So there's no way how we can fight for our rights without, you know, the straight ally. Because some of these straight allies, they can access the government, you know, authorities. They can, you know, access health. You know, they're so helpful.
They can open doors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as you know, Dennis was saying, it does take, for every gay person that stands up, it took at least 10 straights with us to make anything change here in this country. The other thing that happened that's important to underscore what Dows is saying about the straight allies is that Walter Reed Medical Hospital, you know, our military hospital from D.C. has an outlet or had a research facility at Makerere University where they were dispensing information and health things associated with AIDS. As soon as the law passed, the government closed that down because they charged them with promoting homosexuality because they were showing films on how you apply a condom, that kind of thing. So there's been the government is taking a marked approach in a variety of different ways. And most importantly is that in order for any organization in Uganda, what we call a non-governmental organization, NGO, in order to receive any money legally in Uganda, you must be registered. So, of course, the government conveniently won't register the gay groups. So they get no outside funding whatsoever, within Uganda, and by law, they cannot be receiving any money by it, like USAID or any of the other kinds of things. So there's an illegality that the government is using as a manipulative tool.
Mm. We have another clip which talks about some of the challenges of being transgendered in Uganda. Let's take a listen.
It is very hard to find a trans person having completed education in our era in Uganda right now. You'll see someone is like, I'm trans, but then I stopped in senior six and then I couldn't go back to school. There was no one who could pay for me school fees. So these are some of the challenges we are facing as trans people. So I just call upon support and the love and passion they have for us just to flow within us.
Now, is this something that many in the straight community are realize, that being LGBTQ might result in not getting an education or not being able to hold a job? And there are economic implications which can impact the entire country here.
I would say that straight, they haven't realized that. But for example, an LGBT person, comes out and then say that, I'm gay, or I'm bisexual, I'm trans, or lesbian, you would be fired from work. You would be expelled from school. We've had so many cases of where schools, students have been, expelled from school because of being suspected. Because of, the suspicions that come up, and then they're expelled. Not even suspended, mm-hmm. given chance to explain themselves, but expelled, chased out from schools. And these are, and what happens, they put, the entire story in papers and so that if you go somewhere else to ask for a job, or maybe you go somewhere to get another place in a school, you won't be allowed because mm-hmm. they have already exposed you.
What a horrible situation.
So I think that's unfair.
Yeah, completely unfair. So, Tim, can you talk a little bit about the Ugandan view of Westerners and why having this project be about Ugandans by Ugandans is so important?
Wow. I think the maybe and I'll jump
I want,
in.
I want him to jump in too, but I'm gonna start with you.
Okay, yeah. No, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I say this right. So, it's complicated, but of course, Uganda was a British colony. Okay, it was colonized by the British. The way the British did it is when in the 1860s there was a gay king actually in charge of Uganda, and the way that the British always took over a country was first send in the missionaries, get those religious people in there, get them to convert the locals. So that they'll reject the chief, because the chief was the chief religious leader as well as the political leader, right? And being gay, he would have sex with his subjects. So they taught them that they should not be practicing homosexuality. So the king ended up executing 30 of his soldiers because they stopped obeying to him, right? And it's now called the Ugandan Martyrs. 90% of Uganda is Catholic, okay? So the Pope has been there. And this is a really big deal to them, this whole martyr thing. So there you go. They think that homosexuality was brought in by the British when in actuality it was there. It was only homophobia that was brought in, really. So how can you then not understand then after another 100 years of colonial rule and then you get abandoned and you get somebody like Idi Amin or Obote, right. Milton Obote. So the idea that the Westerners have done Uganda a favor is in nobody's mind at all, okay, seriously. And the other thing, in all sincerity, is that, you know, again, lots of Westerners go there, and it's really important that we understand the news there, but nobody bothers to leave that same news in the hands of a Ugandan, let alone allow a Ugandan to generate that news. And we all know, because like right now is a perfect example of it. When you know somebody and you feel comfortable, you can talk with them in a way you won't talk to anybody else, okay? That's what Douse's job is. You know, as much as I've done a lot of background work on the project and stuff, I never sat in front of a Ugandan and did an interview because that would have just totally undercut the entire project. Douse, if you can tell by your own experience of him, he's got the calm demeanor and he truly has the interest in mind when he talks with people. And I love it when he talks and says that he's speaking to them in their own dialects. I'm feeling quite emotional about it because it's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And there's such an honoring to them because, again, if a Westerner asks you something, you're never going to see or understand their reaction to that data because they got a blank face. Mm-hmm. Douse doesn't have a blank face to them and they know he knows what's going on.
Douse, you're nodding your head as he's saying this. And I think you even mentioned something earlier when you were talking about when you do these interviews and somebody is sharing something that's very emotional and very scary if people find, you are sharing back with them.
Exactly.
So yeah. But I mean that could also be just your experience, but are you Ugandan to Ugandan, this is really important for this project.
Very.
Yeah.
It's so important. Because if I speak to Tim McCarthy, I'll be a bit, you know, not so sure of the words to use, you know, the language, the accent. But then when I speak to my fellow Ugandan, you know, there are slangs that we normally use, you know, they would be, it'd be so easy, like, you know, to get the message of what I'm saying. And also, you know, there'll be more expression between me and the person that I'll be, you know.
And I also want to mention, too, because we're talking about the interview that Douse Wood does with that individual person. And what we've done is we've taken Douse does it for, say, a half an hour, and we've edited out about 4 or 5 clips from each one of the ones, and that's what you're playing right now. Short little pieces of audio and video that a person in Uganda can watch. They get their internet on the phone, and a short little video clip, again, the kind of that you're playing here, they can watch on the phone. And Douse, you know, the other information. I know the clips today don't reflect it, but there's medical information, legal information, what you do if you get arrested, who you can talk to, you know, how do you come out to someone? Little real valuable pieces of information.
How do you hook up?
What's wrong with that?
All right, Tim, in one of your video clips you have in your online portfolio, a young man says that when he was introduced as a gay man, the first thing Ugandans think of is sex. So describe how your project hopes to change this perception.
See me as. What we've done is all these interviews that Douse has done, he's asked every single Ugandan 2 particular questions. Please complete the following sentence, see me as. So they get to tell the world how they want the world to see them and how they want to see the future of Uganda. So for us, that's the essence of it. That's the real magic that happens is when people get to share who and what they are and put it out there. That will bring the change that we hope in people's lives.
All right, we have a clip here of a man describing his hope for the future of Uganda.
I want a Uganda that doesn't look at people as gay or straight or this or that. I want a Uganda that looks at everyone as a citizen of the country.
I'm sure you get that statement a lot, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Tim, you're going to be working on editing the film while Dallas is here in the States. Do you have a timeline for having the finished film? And how do you plan to get this film screened to Ugandans?
Oh, I love it. Okay, first and foremost, yes, of course, Dallas and I are so bent on completing a film, of course, with Pepe as well. But the truth also is this is his first time in the United States. So, you know, having to do the pressure of making the film, that was so not important. He's having himself a grand time over here, and I've certainly seen a lot of Uganda. So we've taken the pressure off of us, at least in terms of...
So no timeline. Yeah. You're just going to work
on. Well, yes and no, but I apologize. No, that we really want to make sure that it's completed by the end of this year. We'll be able to work on it over the next 6 months or so to be able to bring a sense of completion to that for sure. Now, showing it over there, that's going to be the fun thing. In essence, I feel, and Dust does too, that we should go and show it to the very people that we interview. We have to go to all those rural places. We're going to drive all around Uganda in a big circle, and we're going to just do guerrilla showing. We're going to show up in someone's home and show it to five or six people. We're going to try and find local churches that are approving and showing in the churches. And essentially, that's the prime way. But the subsidiary to that, or we want to also give people little thumb drives with the video on the thumb drive.
I want to know how you get in the country knowing when they know what you're up to.
I don't know. I've been lucky. No one said anything to me yet.
Yeah. We've been talking about the importance of this being Ugandan to Ugandan. So how did you get involved and why did you want to step into this issue?
Wow. Okay. So I cohabitate with HIV. I didn't start taking the HIV drugs until about 7 years ago. So for about 20-something years, I didn't take anything. I traveled the world with my video camera. And then I got the grand idea one day that I wanted to communicate to my HIV that I didn't want to kill it, that I wanted it not to kill me either. So I thought, well, let me take it back to its homeland. And the first place that HIV showed up in the human race, and unfortunately Dallas can attest to this, was in southern Uganda. It was called SLIM. Dallas has lost both of his parents to that disease in that very same place. So in 1999, I went there. It changed my life. It really did. I was so terrified of so many things, and it broadened me and made me someone. And, of course, I maintained my relationship with Uganda. And not 10 years later, in 2009, I get wind of what American Christians are doing. So I seek out a Ugandan, and I met quite a few. But I ended up with Frank Mugisha, who is the principal activist reflecting Ugandan needs around the world. And so I told him of my desire to train someone, to give them the same kind of techniques and knowledge that I have with my video camera and create in Uganda its own sense of history of itself. So that's how the project began. And Dallas is the real epitome of it. He's the person who's really reflected all that I've... And Pepe shares the same kind of thing.
So, Dallas, they put this camera in your hand. Was this like a magical moment for you that you get to? I mean, you need a lot of courage to do this. But at the same time, you feel strongly about this project as well. So when they came, Dallas, you want to be part of this? You must have been pretty excited and scared all at the same time.
Yes. The first time, actually, how I joined the project was, I just saw, on a post on Facebook. I didn't know Tim, but I knew Pepe because I'd worked with him, in activism, not in video, but in activism, meeting in workshops, conferences. So then I see Pepe writing about, the project that is coming, that everyone should be waiting for. Then I had to text to inbox him. And it was like, we're just trying to think about it. It's not yet ready. With my friend Tim, so I looked at his wall and I saw Tim. I also wrote to Tim. Tim didn't know me, but so I wrote to him. So when Tim came to Uganda, that was in March, May.
Mm-hmm.
Sure,
first time.
Yes, first time. That was second time. Sure, it was first time. after he had come in those 1990s.
Oh, right. I see.
So Pepe calls me and is like, I have a friend of mine who's from the States. He's coming here. So would you join us for a party, welcoming party? So I joined Pepe. And that very day, Pepe introduced me to Tim. So I joined the project. And it was hard for me because training, you know, how am I going to meet these people, you know, my fellow, you know, peers, how am I going to, you know, to interview them, some of the questions. It was hard for me. And even up to now, you know, Tim actually reminds me of how it was hard for me even to do the editing stuff, because I edit the videos as well. Mm-hmm. And at first, when Tim told me to do the editing, I was like, I can't do this. I even told him that, no, Tim, I think this is for you, because I thought, me, I can't do that. I cannot do editing. But I did, because I thought this is something that needs a lot of, you know, experience, a lot of, you know, knowledge. So I was, Tim, I think this is yours. This is not for me. I sounded a bit rude, but eventually I'm happy with all the skills that I've learned.
So what are you hoping the end result is? What are you hoping for the future?
Well, that's a hard question. Well,
what would you like to see happen as a result of this project?
I'd love to see a movie coming out of this whole project. Yeah, I know there's a lot that's, you know, like going on, but I would love to see a movie out of it.
And what would you hope that movie would do?
To change people's attitude, especially in Uganda.
The tagline is sharing hope and creating allies. That's fundamentally behind everything that we're up to here. And that was very kindly put. And Dallas really has, in some respects, I think all of us underestimate ourselves. I don't think we really give ourselves enough credit. And sometimes you need to be surrounded, not sometimes, I think all the time we need to be surrounded by people who expect of us more than we expect of ourselves. Mm. And it's hard being around people who think that you can do better than you can do, or that you think you can do. Excuse me. You understand what I'm saying? So, but he's a perfect example of it, and certainly the work that we've done.
Well, best of luck, and thanks for having the courage to do this, Daus.
Thank you so much.
We'll have a link to the Voices Combating Homophobia Uganda project at our website, capeandislands.org. Daus Karisha and Tim McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us and for the work you're doing.
Thank you, Mindy. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening. Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.